Alrighty, folks, we just scored a very strong Q1 in the stock market. Are we set up? Are we exhausted? Are buyers leaving? What does a strong Q1 mean for Q2, Q3, and Q4? We're going to have this conversation with Taylor from Life Goal Investments. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Yeah, thanks so much. It's funny. What you're saying there is what the headlines will tell you. Too good of a start. Run for the hills. This and that. You just can't be duplicated. So on and so forth. So we did some research. Looking back over the last 75 years, almost 75, back to 1950, the first quarter produced double-digit returns in 16 of those years. So it doesn't happen that frequently, right? 16 out of 75. But what's interesting is, okay, what happens from then through the rest of the year? Because that's where I was interested in seeing. Sure. And so only one time in the subsequent three quarters, the rest of the year, was the market negative. And it was an interesting year that it took to get it there. 1987.
Oh, 87.
Yep. Right, so what happened in 1987? I'll let you do the
Black Monday, baby.
That's it. So the market gapped down 21.
That was November, right?
Yeah, what was it? It was the 21st of October.
October
21st, 22nd, something like that. Anyway, the market literally gapped down 21% in one day.
So again, I haven't looked at 87 in a long time. But so Q1 87 up double digits, one of the 16 years. I'm guessing we ripped in Q2. And then right at the tail end, because October is the beginning of Q4. Correct. So again, Q2, Q3 were up. And then Q4 just fell off a cliff.
Yep. And got it to negative. But it wasn't hugely negative for the year. I don't know the number off the top of my head, but 1987.
Probably single digits. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it was such a good start to the year. So at the end of the day, take that one out. The other 15 years where we had double-digit returns to start the year since 1950 until now, we were positive. So that's a 94% batting average. Not bad. The average return from then through the end of the year was an additional 9.7%.
Wow.
So it's rounded, not like these little measly, modest returns either. Like that's long-term numbers.
So just so we're on the same page, is this Dow? Is this NASDAQ? So
S&P 500. Dow.
Oh, S&P 500.
S&P 500.
So I just want, what is the S&P 500? I'm going to look right now. Let's see. What is the S&P 500? CNBC. So I want to play with this. So S&P 500 today is, let's call it 5,200 for round numbers.
Yep.
So if you're going to throw 10% on that, that's another, I don't know, call it 500 points.
Yep.
Wow.
It's a big number.
That's a big number. Yeah.
It's a big number. Now, again, what we're looking at here is just the headline performance information. You're not taking any qualitative things into nature, any fundamental information into nature. But that's what the quantitative nature says. It says, listen, we were up 10 to begin with. Now, if you associate what happened in that other year, obviously those returns would be more muted. But that was an exogenous event that caused 1987 to have that big breakdown that it had. And the other 15 years, 9.7% positive per year. Final three quarters.
Well, so let's just play this out, right? I don't think it's unreasonable to say that the performance in Q1 was highly leveraged on a handful of stocks. Is that reasonable to say?
Very fair.
So again, if you want to play this, how does the market get 10%, again, using round numbers over the next three quarters? I think the only way that happens is a broadening of the market, which is not unreasonable.
No, it's not. And you're starting to see a broadening of the market now. And you're actually starting to see some of the big names give back some. Apple has been putrid this year. It really has been awful.
Tesla's
been, correct. That's been a bloodbath by all means. And so, you know, you look at some of those top names and they're starting to give back. And what's been interesting is that there had been the prevailing noise last year that the way Apple goes, the market goes. And if Apple sells off, the market can't sustain. And so now, obviously, that narrative has shifted, and maybe now NVIDIA has taken that place. Or that narrative just dissipates because it didn't make sense for Apple, and it might not make sense for NVIDIA either.
Well, let's talk about – so I hadn't planned to go here, but this just jumped in my head. When I think about Apple, I think about Tesla, think about, you know, Gucci. I forget the brand in Europe that Gucci's a part of.
LVMH.
Yeah, LVMH. They're all talking about China demand falling off a cliff. Like Apple was 20%, you know, just horrible numbers. What are you seeing happening in China? It can't be good, right?
It's interesting. It just depends on kind of how you're looking at things. If you're looking at things from a market perspective and looking at the Shanghai index, so the Shanghai index is down 65% from its all-time high. 65.
Is that all?
That's it. Right. So again, the bloodbath in 2008 for us, the S&P was down 37. They're down almost double that.
Yeah. It is
so it is, a basket case. We know that. And yes, we did not get the reopening trade that everyone thought was going to play out in China.
Yeah.
So that is absolutely something that needs to be kept an eye on. But the China market is interesting because I think all emerging markets get basketed into China.
Sure.
And emerging markets are not one singular country. And so when you think about places like India being the, you know, one of the largest constituents, India's GDP in the fourth quarter last year was up 8.4%.
I saw that. I thought it was a misprint.
It seems like it is. It's lapping the field. It's lapping the field, right? So
I saw that.
I think China has the struggles are well documented. The tie to real estate, which is a brutal real estate market, is so tightly knit there. You know,
lots
how much
of pain still to come. Yeah.
It's not over. No doubt about
it. You town and country or whatever the latest and greatest is. Yeah, not good.
Yeah. What's funny is you actually have shared with me personal experience of walking
absolutely
through ghost towns, ghost
I
cities,
have.
I guess.
Wild.
But yeah, so I think that's something that needs to be made aware of. Coming back to kind of when you think about things, so like Tesla has this huge meltdown, but it's not Tesla, it's EVs. So it's Tesla, it's Rivian, it's Fisker, it's you name it in the EV space, they're rolling over. And so it kind of reminds me back a little bit further to kind of new wave, new stage technologies that get presented to the market. So right now it's AI. And so what happens when these new innovative technologies start to take form is on the onset, you get this massive influx of capital buying into what these things could do in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you look at EVs, you look at 3D printing, I don't care if you look at the .com, which obviously the internet is everything we do these days. In the late 90s, you had this massive surge and then you had a rollover because profits didn't follow quickly. And so the market started to say, hey, show me what you're going to do for me. And it doesn't come through quickly. And the market, you know, those stocks fell off a cliff. And then over time, if the technology was worth its weight, they started to come back. And I'm wondering, does AI follow the same progression? Because the amount of capital invested there is certainly not commensurate with the level of profits that have been produced. It's the promise for future profits.
Yeah, I think, I think we've had this conversation before. AI to me, and specifically NVIDIA, is this generation's Cisco systems, right? When the internet was born, you know, it was Cisco switches and, you know, routers and Sun, you know, hardware. I mean, that was the
picks and shovels, right?
Yeah, picks and shovels.
Well, that sounds very reminiscent about what we're hearing on NVIDIA right now.
Yeah. So I think, but again, the other thing that people don't realize is, it went on for, I was at Cisco. I was a contractor at Cisco and the stock was splitting every 10 months or something. It was wild times. It was crazy. I mean, I think I went to a retirement party like every 6 weeks, the last 2 years I was there. It was crazy. It was just wild. But I think NVIDIA's got a long, you know, quarters ahead to just, they're just gobbling up market share. Eventually AMD and, you know, Intel and others will, you know, kind of peel off margin and demand, but you know, that's not 2024. I don't think. I want to go back to China. Cause I do think there's something that bears watching. I think we both would argue that China's economy is in big trouble. Economy is in trouble. I actually see a way out for them. And that is to kind of turn on the manufacturing engine and just flood the market with stuff and create deflation in stuff.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay.
You know, I don't know if that plays out. I don't know if they're ready for that. They have so much. I think the government would have to fund that, right? Kind of firing that engine up again because a lot of their debt's in trouble. But I think they may want to, you know, go back to manufacturing stuff. It'll help with their unemployment problem. Man, I think they have like 25% unemployment for like 20-year-olds or some crazy thing like that.
Yeah, the youth unemployment's brutal.
Why?
So government funded, they get people to work, they pay them on, you know, debt-based payment system from the government. Mm-hmm. They flood the market with stuff just to get stuff out the door, get people employed, bring down costs of whatever goods they're producing. That's interesting. That would, pardon me. because goods, you know, we haven't had goods inflation existent, right? It's been the services side here in the States, at least, that's driven inflation.
Yeah, certainly so the last 9 to 12 months, yeah.
Right, yeah. The early pandemic stuff was all goods associated because people didn't have anything else to buy. Okay, I'm just trying to think about the broader economic impact of something like that playing out.
Yeah, and again, it may be goods shipped to the U.S., but, it, you know, goods to Europe, right? Goods to other places. I'm just trying to think about if you were kind of running a central planning and you had this real estate disaster in front of you, which is not going to get better and you know it for years to come.
Right.
How do you kind of reinvigorate, you know, China One strategy? And I think that's, you know what, folks, we got to get back to making stuff. We can't keep shipping stuff to Vietnam and Thailand and all these other places for, you know, manufacture. We've got to be the, you know, manufacturer of the world. I don't know how else they get by it because it's getting uglier out there.
So they do the opposite of what's being proposed here in the States. So in the States, obviously, we have all this office space that they want to convert to residential. Maybe they take their residential and they take it to manufacturing.
Yeah, I mean, they got these footprints. Unfortunately, it's really hard to bring manufacturing to tall buildings, which is very vertical, at least the ghost towns that I saw. But they could do something. I mean, they've got to do something. So at the end of the day, strong Q1, 16 out of 17, ex-1987 were higher. The average was 9.7. So Taylor, is that your call? Are you calling for 10% the rest of the year?
Don't be scared to death of it. Now, that is a post that we'll hit today talking about some of that stuff. Tomorrow will be the bear case. And I do think that there's just, listen, I'm not saying to be, you know, doom and gloom at all. I do think there are better opportunities elsewhere outside of the S&P 500 where you get a lot of concentration, a lot of names that are heavily priced. And I think there's some opportunities elsewhere that's the route I'd like to take.
There you go. We'll get the bear case tomorrow. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate you.
Yep.